Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Menachas Daf Chof Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn to the upper part of Daf Chof Vov, we notice a Mishnah. Before we learn the Mishnah, let's take advantage of one of the features of our Gemara marking system and the Shas Ozer. You'll notice we have comments in the outside margin. They include Nosei or Noseim, topics, and Mivneh, structural notes that are designed to explain the role of the markings. In this case, in the outside margin, we have a Nosei, and we've written Shiorei Mincha Shenifsedu, the Shirayim. Something happened to the remainder of the Mincha, and as everyone knows, because of having learned so many Dapim so far in Menachos, after the handful of meal offering is taken, that which remains in the original bowl is called the Shirayim. Let us say something happened to the Shirayim that caused them to be a loss. For example, the Mishnah lists off, they became Tomei, or they were burnt, or they got lost. The note in the outside margin continues, Haim Maktirin HaKometz. Does the Kohen continue anyway in the Mincha service, in the meal offering service, by offering the handful and putting it into the fire? Let's now turn to the Mishnah. Nitma'u shi'oreha. The shirayim became tomei, ritually impure. Nisrafu shi'oreha, or they were burnt. Ovdu shi'oreha, or they got lost. The Mishnah goes on now to cite two Tanaic opinions that aren't stating their views here, but rather there's a citation of their views from Maseches Psochim. So, a word of introduction. In an animal sacrifice, after the animal is slaughtered and the blood is received in a receiving vessel, it eventually is applied to the Mizbeach. We call that Zrikas Hadam. What happens if something happens to the meat of the korban? Generally speaking, the meat of the korban of the sacrifice is eaten by the kohanim, with the exception of a korban ola. Or, when we say eaten, not only by the kohanim, you have situations whereby kochim kalim, the owners also eat of the meat. The main point for our discussion is, let's say the meat is no longer there. So Shitas Rabbi Eliezer, that's cited in Maseches Psochim, is that you will sprinkle the blood even if there is no meat. Shitas Rabbi Yoshua in Maseches Psochim is that if there's no meat, there's no blood. Namely, if something happens to the meat, then there's no sprinkling of the blood. So, adopting their shitos, their opinions, from Psochim dealing with animal sacrifices, and applying that to the meal offering, let's see what happens. So the Mishnah says, Kemidas Rabbi Eliezer, Ksheira. In following the approach of Rabbi Eliezer with regard to the animal sacrifices, who said that you will sprinkle the blood even if there's no meat, so to here, you will offer the kometz, the burning of the kemitza, is parallel to the sprinkling of the blood, so you will offer the kometz even if there's no shirayim left, the shirayim being parallel to the meat. Uchamidas Rabbi Yoshua psula. And following the approach of Rabbi Yeshua from Sochem, it would come out, just like over there he says, if there's no meat, there's no need to sprinkle the blood, so too if there is no shirayim by the meal offering, so there's no offering of the handful. As we turn to the Gemara, we notice Rav's name is circled. Let us glance at the outside margin, Nosei Mivneh. There will be, after we read Rav's opinion, whose name was circled simply to highlight his name, there will be a volcano shape, a trapezoid, that you'll see two of them in the next few lines. This is explained in the outside margin under our Nosei Mivneh heading. the Mivneh being the structure. Here our structural note is combined with the topic note. In the Gemara, we will see Shlavim. These volcano shapes, these trapezoids, represent stages, but Birur Divrei Rav, and trying to clarify Rav's comment, Shapiresh HaTana Rabbi Yeshua. Rav, in our Gemara, will be focusing on the Tana Rabbi Yeshua that we just learned in the Mishnah. Sherak im nitme'u kol shiareha psula. It is true that Rabbi Yeshua said that if there's no meat, in the case of the animal sacrifices, there's no blood, and we then parallel that to the mincha, if there's no shirayim, so there's no offering of the komets, of the handful. Rav will tell us this is true only if all of the shirayim became tomei. So in the initial, in the opening of the Gemara, even though we in the Mishnah cited three different kinds of problems that could arise with regard to the Shirayim, Rav's opening comment and the first stage of understanding will be focusing on the Shirayim becoming Tomei. Let us now read the Gemara. Omar Rav. The who is a pronoun referring to that which Rabbi Yeshua declared as unfit. The who, the shenitme'u kol shioreha. This need for komets offering is under the circumstances that all of the remainder became tome. Avol. However, miksa shiareha loy. If part of the shirayim remained tohor, did not come into contact with the source of tumah, then even Rabbi Yeshua will concede that it is acceptable to offer the handful. So Rav's point right now at this stage is to make a distinction between partial loss and total loss. Ka salka daitoch, our thought is, but this will be changed later in the Gemara, at this stage our thought is, nitma in ovud v'sorof lo, since Rav cited nitmeu, and you'll notice we had underlined the word nitmu. That was to draw your attention to focus on nitmu, and that's what the Gemara is doing right now. The thought is that Rav's din applies to the case of nitmu, that only in nitma does the fact that some remains assist us in offering the komets. That only in the case of tuma is there a partial remaining is of significance. However, ovud v'soruf lo, but in the case of lost or burnt, we would say there is no significance to the fact that some is left. In other words, in the case of ovud v'soruf, lost or burnt, even a partial loss would tell us to stop the process, and the komets will not be offered. Upon this assumption that the leniency, exists only in the case of tuma, the leniency with regard to shiur and not ovud v'soruf, now that raises a question. My kosovar. What's the underlying reasoning behind Rav? E kosovar, if he holds shiura milsahi, that shiura means something is left, something remains, that we'll call it remnant, is milsa means of significance, the fact that there is a remnant or something remains that is significant, then afilu ovud v'soruf nami, that even in the case of something getting lost, the remainder getting lost or burnt, if some remains, it should be considered kosher, and he should be able to offer the komets. E kosova shiura lav milsahi. If Rav holds that in essence, the fact that something remains is not significant, the nitmo mai taimo. And if that's the case, why in the case of nitma does Rav say that if something remains, even though the remainder is of no significance, that you go ahead anyway and offer it? Dimeratzetzitz, because in the case of Tumah, we say the golden headplate of the Kohen Gadol, of the high priest, has an atonement effect within the realm of ritual impurity, within the realm of Tumah. Well, if Rav's din is focused on Tumah, because the tzitz serves to atone and enable the process to continue, then kol shioreha nami, then even if all of the shirayim became tamei, he should go ahead anyway. Why then does Rav make a distinction between total and partial? So either way you look at it, we are having trouble getting a fix on Rav's din. The Gemara therefore changes course and says, Li'oilom kosovar shiura milsahi. Basically, Rav holds that if something of the shirayim remains that is of significance, v'nitma, and Rav cited the example of tuma setting upon part of the shirayim, v'wadin lo'avod v'sarof, the same din would apply to the case of partial loss and partial burning. Namely, if something remains after a loss or after a burning, but some of the shirayim remains, Rav will concede that you go ahead and do the kometz, offer the kometz. V'hai dekomer nitma, and the fact that Rav cited in his example the case of tuma, rishayu nokat, he simply chose the first in the list. The Mishnah mentioned problems with regard to the shirayim. The first problem that was mentioned was nitma, so Rav used that as an example, but not to the exclusion of the others. Kidisanya. We have a source now that illustrates the idea of shiura milsa. If you look in the Rashi on this Kidisanyo, you'll see that he ties it into Rabbi Yeshua. In this source, of course, that Rabbi Yeshua is emphasized, we dashed underline his name at the opening of this Tanaic source, which of course you can see is in a frame, as in all of our Gemara markings, we attempt to place Tanaic sources in frames so as to distinguish it from the rest of the Gemara literature. So Rashi points out, Kedesanya, reading the Rashi, Rabbi Yeshua nami machshir hecho deiko shiur afilu ba'ovid v'sorof. Rabbi Yeshua will concede that it's considered kosher if something remains, even in the case of Ovid and Sorov, meaning when we say kosher, it means go ahead and offer the handful. Kedisanya, now turning to the Gemara on the first wide line in the frame section. Rabbi Yeshua Oimer, Kol Hazvochim, in the markings that you see in the source itself, you'll see we've underlined and numbered 1, 2, and 3. Category 1 is general animal sacrifices, 2 is a reference to the Ola, and 3 is a reference to a meal offering. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Kol hazvochim shebetoro, shenishtayer mehen kezayas boser o kezayas chelev. Here another important expression is shenishtayer, which you can see is dashed underlined. In the case of all animal sacrifices, if an olive quantity of meat or of chelev, which is a type of fat substance inside the animal that's put on the mizbeach, offered on the mizbeach, if a kezayas of meat or a kezayas of chelev remains, zorek es hadam, then you go ahead and do the blood sprinkling. Something significant remains. Significant in this case is evaluated by this rather small amount, namely an olive size worth of meat or of chelev. However, kechatzi zayas baser ukechatzi zayas chelev, eino zorek esadam. If what remains is a half olive quantity of meat and a half quantity of chelev, half kechatzi zayas means a half olive quantity of chelev remains, even though two halves would equal one whole kezias in quantity, nevertheless, eino zorek es adam, there is not enough left to enable zrikas adam to take place, because of the idea that achilo and haktora, the person eating of the meat, the mizbeach receipt of the chalev, since they're small, these two called realms, they don't join up. So you don't have a joining of the meat and the chalev to equal an olive quantity. Therefore, it's considered as nothing remains. Therefore, this is Rabbi Yeshua l'shitaso. Rabbi Yeshua is consistent with what he said earlier, that if there's nothing remains, so there's no sprinkling of the blood. Uba oila. When it comes to a korban ola, the nature of which is everything is burnt, the meat and the chalev. Let's say that you have a korban ola and almost all of it got lost or got ruined, but there remains a half zayas of chalev and a half zayas of basar, since their destination is the same place, namely on the mizbeach for burning. The source says, afilu kechatzi zayas basar, kechatzi zayas chalev, zorek es adam. Even if you have a half zayas quantity of meat and of chalev, they do join up for enabling the sprinkling of the blood to take place. Because the nature of an ola is it's completely kolil, means completely burnt, so that the meat and the chalev have the same destination, and therefore they join up. Uva mincha, the following phrase of this brisa will read it, but it will encounter difficulty. It says, afilu kulo kayemes, in a meal offering, even if the entire meal offering is present, lo yizrok, then you do not sprinkle the blood. Well, the Gemara asks, mincha mai avidita, what is the nature of the mincha with regard to blood? Mincha is a meal offering. There's no blood sprinkling when you're dealing with a grain meal offering. Amar Rav Papa explains, the reference here to mincha is minchas nesachim. We're talking about the type of meal offering that accompanies an animal sacrifice. And what are the circumstances? You have an animal sacrifice that was brought, and together with it, the meal offering. But in the case of the animal part, nothing is left. He simply has the blood in a receiving vessel, ready for sprinkling. All the meat, all the chalev, everything is lost. But the mincha is intact. Now, this is a mincha that comes as part of the animal offering. So salka daito chamina, I would have thought without this source, hayul ubahadi zevach koasya, since the minchas nesachim comes together with the animal offering, kegufa dezivcha damya, is viewed as part of the animal itself, and therefore, even if there is no meat, but at least you've got the meal offering that accompanies it intact, so go ahead and sprinkle the blood. Kamash malon, that's what this source says, that even though there's a relationship between the mincha, nevertheless, it's not a significant enough connection, if you will, to enable the zrikas hadam when, of course, there's nothing left of the animal itself. Mino hanimili. You'll notice we have a new marking that we want to pay attention to. There's a double underline with dots in it. The Gemara will be asking, what is the source that if there is no basar, but there is chalev, that you will do zrikas hadam? So on the outside margin, we have a nosei mivneh heading. This double underline is going to highlight chipus mekoros, the search for sources, la halocha, for the halacha de'im loy nishar basar avo nishar chelev, or yoseres ushnei kloyos, becholzo zorek es adam. The Gemara will be featuring the halacha that we alluded to just now, that if you have an animal offering and there remains just the chelev, you have a kezias worth of chelev, even though there is no meat. Well, how do you know that the remaining of the chalev is significant enough to allow the zrikas hadam? There's another type of remaining that we didn't discuss earlier. Let's say no meat is left. There's no chalev, but there's the yoseres and shnei kloyos. These are internal organs of an animal that are, in the case of a sacrifice, are placed on the mizbeach. So let's say that you have only the yoseres or shnei kloyos that remains. You don't have the basar and you don't have the chalev. Nevertheless, there is a halacha that is significant as well to enable the zrikas hadam to take place. And the Gemara right now will be asking, how do I know these 2 points. And if you see, we have the Menohan immediately in the Gemara text with this double underline and dots in it. If you skim down a few lines, about 4 lines from here, you'll notice the word Minolon with the same marking. There too, the Gemara will be asking, what is the source for the case of the Yoseres Ushte Kloyos organs? That they're remaining, they're will allow the Zrika Sadam to take place. Turning to the Gemara. Menohani Mili. From where do we know that if there is no Basar, but there is Chelev, that there is Zrika Sadam? Omar Rav Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Yishmael, Umotu Ba, Mishum Rabbi Yishu ben Chananias. Rabbi Yochanan quotes Rabbi Yishmael, and some say, in the name of Rabbi Yishu ben Chananias, Omar Kro. This we're calling Aleph, because at this point we're going to focus on the Chelev. The pasuk says, "V'hiktir ha'chelev l'reach nichoyach l'Hashem." That's what the pasuk says, and you'll offer the chelev as a pleasant smell to the Almighty. Chelev v'afalpi shein basar. From here, we infer that chelev is sufficient, even if there is no meat that remains. V'ashkichon chelev. With this, we find a source for chelev. Yoseres u'shtei kloyos minolon. From where do I know that if yoseres and shtei kloyos remains, that's also good enough reason for zrikas adam? Dikotoni, the Mishnah taught as follows. Uvemincha, afilu kulu kayemes lo yizroik. It taught that if in the case of a mincha, and we said the minchas nesachim, that if it remains, even if it remains in total amount, still you do not do the zrika sadam. Now we will infer, mincha hu delo yizroik. The mincha is not good enough reason for allowing the zrika sadam to take place. Ha yoseres ushtei kloyos yizroik. However, if that remains, that's part of the animal itself, then you do the Zrika Sadam. Minolon, where do you know that from? What's the scriptural source for that? Rabbi Yochanan Didei, Omar, Rabbi Yochanan himself says, the reason that the Gemara mentions Didei, Rabbi Yochanan himself, because in the previous reference to Rabbi Yochanan, he was quoting Tanoim. Here, Rabbi Yochanan is saying on a tradition that he, on his own, that he knows, and he's not quoting any names. Omar, he says, L'reach Nichoach, that's from our Pasuk. Kol Shatomala L'reach Nichoach, anything that's placed on the Mizbeach. Four, creating this pleasant smell, and the pleasant smell is accomplished by the burning of, we'll call it meat parts of the animal, so that the Yoseres and Shtei Kloyos also produces this Reach Nichoach. At this point then, we see there are sources for Chelev, there's a source for Chelev, and a source for the Yoseres and Shtei Kloyos. Why do I need to cite both of them? So, v'itzterich lemichtav chelev, v'itzterich lemichtav lereach nichoach. Generally speaking, in this kind of Gemara, the assumption is that there must be some special necessity, because otherwise it would have been sufficient to teach me one, and on my own I would have figured that the other applies as well. So here the Gemara says, I need to be taught both. De'i kosav chelev, had the Torah written that chelev is good reason enough for zrikas adam, havi amino chelev in yoseres ushtei kloyos lo, I would have thought that it's a special halacha by chelev, that chelev is the only, besides the meat, only the chelev is good reason, and is good enough for allowing zrika. But I wouldn't have known Yoseres and Shtei Kloyos. Therefore, Kosav Rachmono Reach Nichoach. Therefore, the Torah uses the expression Reach Nichoach to include the Yoseres and Shtei Kloyos, and not relied on Chelev itself. So once again, had the Torah written Chelev, I would have said, okay, the Torah says Chelev, that's it. How? I wouldn't go further than Chelev. V'i kosav rachmono l'reach nichoach, had the Torah written just the expression reach nichoach, have amino afilu mincha, I would have thought that you are able to go so far as to include the case of the mincha as being sufficient grounds for enabling zrika sadam to take place. Therefore, kosav rachmono chelev, therefore the Torah uses the word chelev to serve as a limitation. And Rashi explains that that reyach nichoach will include only things that are like chelev, namely that come from the animal itself, thereby excluding mincha. But at the same time, we learn that yeseris and shtei kloyos are sufficient reason for an allowing zrikas adam to take place. The Mishnah. The Mishnah will talk about the handful taken from the bowl of meal offering. That handful, as we've mentioned numerous times, is destined to the Mizbeach. The Shirayim are left for the Kohanim to eat. What does one do with the handful before it gets to the Mizbeach? So the Mishnah will deal with this issue of the handful that's taken directly without being placed into a second kli sharis, a second service vessel designed for the handful. So what happens if it's not put into a second kli sharis? The Mishnah says, Shaloi b'kli sharis pasul. If the kometz is not sanctified in a second surface vessel, certain kli sharis, the Tanakhama says, then you have not fulfilled the mincha requirement and it's unfit. Rabbi Shimon says, listen, you brought the original mincha. The original mincha was placed in a kli sharis. That's enough. It received its contact with a service vessel, the initial service vessel. You do not need to put it into a second kli sharis. The Mishnah now teaches another halacha. Hikter koinsa pa'amayim kshera. The handful was placed into the fire, not in one shot, but in two separate placings. The Mishnah says that that's okay. The Gemara later will deal with, is this literally two placings into the fire? In other words, he took the kometz and split it into two parts. What happens if he were to take the kometz, the handful, and apply it in three separate installments? That's or more. That's called pa'amim. Pa'amayim u'pa'omi pa'amim is the lashon of the Gemara later on. Is so that will be a separate discussion. Before we go further in the Gemara, let us glance at the topic heading we have on the outside margin. Note say, Deois Amoroyim Bedivrei Hatanoyim. We will see some Amoroyim appearing in this Gemara, and their comments are comments upon that which the Tanoim said. Ha'im yesh lahakpid al yamin the kiddush kli behakrovas koimetz. Is one to be concerned that the right hand is used, exclusively right hand, and the sanctification of the koimetz in a second kli shores, we call it kiddush kli, during the offering of the koimetz itself? We will touch on this point where is there a need that to take the kometz in this second vessel, in this kli shares, the second kli shares, and from it pour the handful from the kli shares directly onto the fire. This sugya presents the Amoroyim in a fashion that is not. At least it appears to me in a fashion that's not characteristic of many Gemaras in terms of in a very, let's say, structured series fashion. However, as far as when the Gemara goes on, it will refer to these three shitas as a unit later on Omid Beis. So in the meantime, as far as our markings are concerned, we didn't note them we didn't use a series marking. We underline their names, but let that be sufficient for right now, coupling with our comments right now, that we are to view these three Amoroyim as part of the same sugya. The names, but let's skim ahead, let's just to cite the names, let their names become familiar to us immediately. We're going to cite Rabbi Yehuda, Braid, Rabbi Chia. You'll see two lines later, we've underlined Rabbi Yanai's name, and two lines after that, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak. As we said, as we learned the Gemara, they will not appear instantly to be, let's say, a clear series of opinions. However, as we said before, they do join together to form such an entity later. Omar Rabbi Yehuda Brei Rabbi Chia. My time of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon, in our Mishnah, represented a lenient opinion, where the need for a second klisharis is not binding. What is his basis? Omar Kral, there's a pasuk in the context of the mincha, of the meal offering, that says, Kodesh Kodoshim hi kachatos v'cha asham. It is considered high-level holiness, like an animal offering of a chatos or an asham. As is well known, a chatos and asham are examples of Kodesh Kodoshim. The pasuk says the mincha is that way as well. Why the comparison to both chatos and asham? So the Gemara explains, and this is the review of Rabbi Chia's explanation of the basis of Rabbi Shimon. Bo le'ovda, someone comes to offer the kometz. Biyad, if he is going to offer the kometz directly from his hand, he's going to take it in his hand and bring it to the mizbeach while holding in his hand and from his hand directly into the fire. Then oivda biyamin kechatos. Then you have to use your right hand. The same way the Kohen uses his right hand for sprinkling the blood of a sin offering, of an animal sin offering. In the case of the animal sin offering, the Rabbi Shimon says, you'll have to use your right hand. Therefore, in the Pasuk that features the Mincha, we see the Mincha compared to the Chatos. It's telling you that in the case of Mincha as well, there will be a time that you must use your right hand, and that is in the case when you're offering the Kometz onto the fire directly from your hand. There's another possibility, the Kli, if you decide to use a vessel, and bring the handful of the meal offering to the mizbeach and the fire while in a vessel, and then pouring the handful into the fire directly from the vessel, then oivda b'smoil ke'osham. Then you do not have to use your right hand. You can use even your left hand for that purpose, for pouring it onto the fire. As is the case of an osham, according to Rabbi Shimon, and of course Rabbi Yehuda Brei Rabbi Chia is explaining Rabbi Shimon, according to Rabbi Shimon, the blood applications of a korban osham can be done with one's left hand. And the reason for that is, according to Rabbi Shimon, in order to get you to a limitation to right hand, that's only if you have in the pasuk the expression etzpa and kahuna. If you have in the Torah just the word kahuna in a pasuk dealing with, we're talking right now about sprinkling of the blood, and we're specifically the osham sprinkling. In the case of osham sprinkling, there is no, the word etzba doesn't appear, only the word kahuna. Therefore, you are not limited in the case of an osham to the right hand. Therefore, there is a possibility of left hand. How about in the case of the mincha? So in the case of the mincha, if you are going to offer it through a vessel, then you can hold the vessel containing the kometz in your left hand and thereby depositing or pouring the handful onto the fire in that fashion. So to review Rabbi Yehuda Brei Rabbi Chia's teaching, if you're going to offer the kometz using your hand, then you have to use your right hand. If you decide to use a vessel, then you are not restricted to your right hand. You can use your left hand as well. What do we see, though, from all of this? We see, according to Rabbi Shimon, that there is no absolute necessity of having the handful of the kometz placed into a separate kli shares. And that's what our Mishnah taught under the name of Rabbi Shimon. So the source for Shitas Rabbi Shimon, according to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Chiya, is the hekesh to the korban chatos. Hekesh meaning the comparison of mincha to the korban chatos. Continuing in the Gemara, Rabbi Yanai Omar, Kevon shekamtsoi mikli shores. Once you took the handful from a service vessel, ma'aleu umaktiro afilu behemaino veafilu bemekedo shel cheres. You can then bring it to the mizbeach, even in the hamaino is a belt or just a piece of fabric that's used to wrap around the midsection of an individual, so that the kohen could take it. The kohen had an article of clothing called the avnet. He can have the kometz hold wrap the kometz in his avnet or even in an earthenware vessel and bring it to the mizbeach in that fashion. So you can see that Rabbi Yanai has absolutely no form of restriction when it comes to the point of haktorah, how it is placed in the fire or from using right hand, left hand. He says even things that are not hands at all, you can use them to put the kometz into the fire. Rav Nachman by Yitzchak Omar, Hakol Moidim Bekometz Shetoun Kiddush. Everyone, according to Rav Nachman, agrees that the handful must be sanctified. Well, what do you mean everyone agrees? Rabbi Shimon said that you don't need to have the kli shores for the kometz. So Rashi explains, and let's look at it together. Rashi on the second line under the Gemara text, Hakol Moidim Bekometz Shetoun Kiddush, V'chimachshi Rabbi Shimon, when Rabbi Shimon comes to allow for leniency, the hekter, that's with regard to the burning. Sheim notloi mitoch kli shoris la'achar shekitshuboy ve'leu biyodoi ve'hiktiroi kosher. According to this approach, the kometz does need to be sanctified in a second kli shoris. It's not sufficient, according to Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok's understanding of Rabbi Shimon, that it was found as the kometz was, before it was taken, was part of the entire mincha in a first kli shoris. That's not enough. You have to take the kometz and put it into a second kli shoris. Then what does Rav Nachman mean when he says everyone agrees it needs kiddush kli, when in the Mishnah we saw the Rabbi Shimon representing leniency? Rabbi Shimon's leniency was that after it's put in the second kli shores, then you have the option of taking it out of the kli shores, the second kli shores, and putting it into the fire using your hand. But Rav Nachman Yitzchok is not suggesting that a second kli shores can be done away with. That, he will tell you, everyone agrees, is necessary. So we see a number of different, let's say, Amoraic approaches to how one deals with the handful after it's taken from its original bowl. The Gemara will raise questions, but the structure here is very interesting. The Gemara first raises a question that's focused on Rabbi Yehuda Breid Rabbi Chia. Later in the Gemara, there's only one question that's focused directly on Rabbi Yehuda Breid Rabbi Chia, at least at this point in the Gemara. There will be allusions to Rabbi Yehuda later on, but as far as the structure is concerned, there's this meisvei we're about to read. It's not part of a series. A few lines later, you'll see a geometric form, one of our series markings, a crown form in this case. There will be a series of questions that are raised against Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok. In the meantime, meisvei. We have a Tanaic source. In this source, if we use our markings, just focusing on the markings, specifically the part of the source that's called Bays, that talks about the comets, and it mentions other things under our Bays heading, but focusing on comets and the dashed underlining, we have the comets, Shehelon, was put in the fire, and that's a diagonal dash underline. That's to enable you to contrast it or compare it to the ratio that you see the word Helon as well. What else do you see? You see Biyad is dashed underline. So you have the comets, Shehelon Biyad, and you also have the word Besmoil, Ksherin. So according to this Tanaic source, you have the handful of the meal offering placed into the fire using one's left hand. Well, if you're using your hand to put it into the fire, what did Rabbi Yehuda Bar Rabbi Chiya say? He said that even Rabbi Shimon, who was supposedly a lenient opinion, even he said that if you're going to use your hand for that purpose, you're going to have to use your right hand because of the hekesh to achatos. Here we have a Tanaic source indicating otherwise. Hence, the fact that we have a Tanaic source indicating otherwise against the Amora Rabbi Yehuda Bar Rabbi Chiya, this represents a question to him. So, again, the question is, in this source we see the use of the left hand for placing into the fire. According to Rabbi Yehuda Bar Rabbi Chiya, if you're using your hands for placing comets into the fire, you have to use your right hand. Let's now read the source. Meisvei. The truth is that outside of the points we raised, the rest of the details of this source are not important for us at this point. We've broken the source up into Aleph and Beis because that's how the source essentially says the same halacha, but in two installments, two sections. So section Aleph has examples in it, and we've numbered them 1 and 2. Hector, Chalovim, Vevorim, the Eitzim. The burning of Chalovim and Evorim are the limbs of the animal offering. Eitzim, the wood. Shehelon, that are brought up to the Mizbeach, Bein Biyad, Bein Bikli, Bein Bin, Bein Besmol, Ksherin. They're brought up onto the Mizbeach and put into the fire. Whether you brought it by hand or in a vessel, whether you use the right hand or left hand, any method is acceptable. Base, the same results as we just saw in the first section, this time featuring other examples, hakimetz, the handful of a meal offering, akturas, the incense, vahalavona, the lavona spice, which was part of different korbonas, different meal offerings, shehelon, bein biyad, bein bikli, bein bimin, bein besmoil, ksherim. For our purposes that we emphasize, we see yad, smoil, we see hand, left hand being featured as being okay. Tiufta de Rabbi Yehuda Bar Rabbi Chiya. This is, in effect, a question. Is this a repudiation of Rabbi Yehuda Bar Rabbi Chiya's approach that said that if you are going to use your hand, you have to use the right hand? Omar loch Rabbi Yehuda Bar Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi Yehuda will get out of this problem through a technicality. He says that this source is litzdodin katani. The way we read it was simply to read off a list of options that are available. He says, litzdodin literally means to different sides. It means you have to reorder the source as follows. And we've included a little frame here to indicate that this is his understanding of the Tanaic source. Biyad biyamin. If you are going to use your hand, you've got to use the right hand. Bekli, if you are going to use a vessel, then both options are open. Bein b'yamin, bein b'smoil. So that's how he reads the source. And with that reading, so then his original opinion is preserved. That if you're using right hand, if you're using hand, you have to use your right hand. Toshma. This is the beginning of a series of questions, and we featured them on the outside margin, the Mivneh, with the crown form written there. So, Kushyos al Rav Nachman, the Omar HaKol Moedim, including Rabbi Shimon. These will be Kashas on Rav Nachman, who said everyone agrees, even Rabbi Shimon, the Kometz Boy Kiddush Kli, that the Kometz, the handful, requires a second service vessel for its, we'll call it the additional sanctification. So according to Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok, he said everyone agrees with that. These questions will present Tanaic sources that seem to say otherwise, that not everyone agrees. Toshma, the source begins, Kamsoi Mikli Shores, he took his handful of meal offering from an original service vessel, V'kidshoi Shaloi Mikli Shores, and then did not sanctify it in a second holy vessel. Ve'elo ve'ektiroi shelo b'kli shoreis, brought it up to the Mizbeach and put it in the fire, not using a holy service vessel. Puzzle. It's unacceptable. Reb Lozer, Reb Shimon, machshirin b'matan kli. They say that it's kosher, even using a vessel, and Rashi explains, even if it's not a kli shoreis. That's the important point here, so that even though it may be it's hard to see in the words, Rashi emphasizes this, that when they are machshir b'matan kli, it means, at least at this point in the understanding, using a vessel, even if it's not a holy vessel, even if it's not a kli shoreis, that is a problem for Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok. So he answers, Emo, mimatan kli v'eilich. This means the subsequent stages in the mincha offering, you do not need to have a kli shoreis. And that's a reference to the hoilocha, the carrying of the handful, and the haktorah, and the burning. Those do not have to have a kli shoreis. However, the handful, once it's taken, has to be placed temporarily, or for a moment, it has to be placed into a second kli shoreis. If after you placed it into the second kli shoreis, you decided to carry it to the Mizbeach in your hand, in other words, taking it out of that second kli shoreis, that's okay. But there has to be a stage in which, after the handful was taken, that handful is placed in a kli shoreis. Toshma. So we bring another Tanaic source, which once again will present a problem for Rav Nachman. Toshma v'chachomim oimrim, kaimetz ta'un kli shoreis. The chachomim say that the handful requires a service vessel. Ketzad, komso mikli shoreis. He takes the handful of meal offering from an original kli shoreis. Umekatsho mikli shoreis. And it's placed in a second service vessel. This, so far, is like, this is what Rav Nachman wanted you to do, to put it into a second kli shoreis, but later we'll see that not everyone in this source says the same thing. So the Chachamim in the meantime say, there makatsho b'kli shoreis, u'ma'aloi, u'maktiro b'kli shoreis, and you bring it up to the Mizbeach and put it in the fire, from the service vessel. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kevin Shekamso Mikli Shoreis, once you took the original handful from the Kli Shoreis bowl in which the entire mincha had been placed, Ma Loi Umaktiroi Vidayo. You bring it up to the Mizbeach, put it in the fire, and that's enough. Namely, according to Rabbi Shimon, you see that the fact that the handful was taken from an original kli shoreis, that's all that you need. That is a problem for Rav Nachman Yitzchok, because he had mentioned everyone agrees that you do need a second service vessel, and here you see Rav Shimon saying, not so. So Rav Nachman will tell you, Emo, understand the source as follows. Kevon shekomso v'kidshoi b'kli shoreis, ma'alu maktir v'dayo. Notice we've dashed, underlined the word v'kidsho, so as to drive home the point that Rav Nachman wanted to make. That once the handful was taken and then sanctified in a second kli shoreis, from that point onwards then we're not restrictive. But there is a necessity for a second kli shoreis, conformity to Rav Nachman's standard. Ta shma. We have another Tanaic source that continues till Amud Beis. Komatz biyaminoi v'nosan b'smoilo yachzir limino. If the handful was taken in the one's right hand, and the kohen, after taking it, let's say, took it properly, he then transferred the handful of meal offering to his left hand. Well, this opinion says yachzir limino. You've got to put it back into your right hand. Once again, we said before, we saw this idea before, that if you choose to do the kometz offering without a vessel, then you have to use your right hand. So that's what this opinion reflects. That's why it's got to be put back into the right hand. There's another halacha that this source teaches, b'smoiloi. That means you took the handful in the left hand. V'chishev olea, and at that point, while it's in his left hand, he has incorrect thoughts. Incorrect thoughts meaning thoughts bein chutz limkomo, bein chutz lizmano. Thoughts to eat the shirayim outside of its proper domain, outside the azora of the Beis HaMikdash, or beyond the allowed time, namely eating it the next day. Pasul v'ein bo kores. This renders the korban, the meal offering, unfit, but there's no kores penalty because this was in the realm of chutz limakoma that does not carry with it kores. However, biyaminoi chishev olea, if he took the handful in his right hand and then had these incorrect thoughts, chutz limakoma pasul v'ein bo kores, chutz lizmanoi pigol v'chayoven olav kores. Divrei Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon. We should have pointed out, with regard to the left hand, if he had the incorrect thoughts, even if it was outside of time, beyond time, there was no kores, and that's because the left hand is not suitable for avoda. This is the idea also that we saw before, that the smoil, without a kli, it's not acceptable. Only if you're using a vessel would it be acceptable, according to Rabbi Shimon, whose name we just cited in this source. Since it's unacceptable to process the mincha that way, incorrect thoughts do not take hold. However, if you did it in your right hand, right meaning the right side as opposed to left, and also we'll call it the correct hand, then is incorrect thoughts will take hold. So if it's a chutz limkomo thought, it's posel v'ein bo kores. If it's a chutz lizmano thought that he has while it's in his right hand, it creates pigel that carries with it the kores penalty. And that's the opinion of Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon. V'chachomim omrim, kevon shenosno lismoil, posaltoi matonoso. Once the handful is in the left hand, it has no. There is no longer any hope for it. It's considered a loss. There's no takana for it. My taimo, why is it a loss once it's in the left hand? According to the Chachamim, there doesn't seem to be an option of putting it back into the right hand and making it good. My taimo, why do the Chachamim hold this way? Mishum deboi. Kedusha b'kli. The Chachamim are of the opinion that you do need to sanctify the kometz in a service vessel, in a second service vessel. The kevon shenosnoi l'smoil, and once it was placed in the left hand, we saw in this case, even if the In this case, once it gets into the left hand, the Chachamim will tell you it's naase kedam shenishbach mitzaver beim ala ritzva v'osvoi sheposel. There's a parallel that's being drawn between the meal offering and an animal offering. In an animal offering, if you slaughtered the animal and the blood was not received into a service vessel, but spilled from the neck of the animal directly onto the floor, it will not help if you gather it together from the floor and carry on with the show. That's considered posel. So the Chachomim tell you that if the handful of the meal offering is placed in the left hand, it's like the case of Dam Shenishbach Mitzaver Behemo, it's considered a total loss. That is as far as the Chachomim's opinion is concerned. Michlal de Rebbe Lozer of Rebbe Shimon, they had mentioned that if it gets into the left hand, it's not a total loss. There's hope that you can put it back into the right hand. So they must be of a different opinion. Michlal de Rebbe Lozer of Rebbe Shimon, lo bo'u matan kli. They do not require it to be placed into a second service vessel. The Rashi across from you says, lo bo matan kli, de'i boi, if there was a requirement for this second service vessel for the handful, les leitakanta b'chazara k'depricious, there would have been no solution by it being put back into the right hand, as Rashi explained earlier. Da'avelei k'nishbach ala ritzva minatzavar, then it would have been like the case of the blood flowing directly onto the floor from the neck of the animal shepasol, which is learned from v'nafgalon mivalokach midam apar, that's a posuk, dam me'apar yekablenu kabola, must be from the animal and not from the floor. V'kidush kometz b'mokom kabola's dam, the sanctification of the kometz is parallel to kabola's dam. Usmoil b'lo kli hare hi karitzba, and according to the Chachomim, the left hand, the kometz placed in the left hand without a vessel is, in other words, the kometz is taken with the left hand directly in his hand and not while holding a vessel. That's karitzpa. That's like the floor. Rabbi Shimon small be kabbalah lo hichshir elo bekli. Rabbi Shimon, in allowing left hand, he allowed it only if you're holding a vessel in your left hand. That's as far as the Chachomim are concerned, but as far as the Rebbe Lozer and Rebbe Shimon, who said that the kometz has a solution, if it's in the left hand, it can be placed in the right hand. Therefore, the left hand is not like spilling onto the floor, spilling from the animal's neck directly to the floor. It must be that they hold that the left hand is, it's as if it, there was a Kabbalah B'Kli. It's as if the blood was accepted in a vessel. In other words, the left hand is not considered a total loss like the case of the blood flowing onto the floor. And therefore, all that's expected of you is take it, put it back into the right hand. So from all of this analysis, what do we see? That only the Chachomim require matan kli of the kometz. Rebbe Lozer, Rebbe Shimon, who said that from the left hand there is a solution, it must be that they don't require that kometz was ever placed in a service vessel to begin with. So to this, the Gemara says, Tiyufta de Rav Nachman. Tiyufta. This is a total repudiation of Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman had said, all Tanoim will agree you need to have Kiddush Kli of the Kometz. And you see from here that in the case of Rebbe Lozer, Rebbe Shimon, they do not require Kiddush Kli for the Kometz. Rebbe Yehuda Breid Rebbe Chiyah Mesayei Alei. This source supports Rebbe Yehuda Rebbe Chiyah. How? In what way? In this source we saw that if it's in the left hand, you're supposed to put it into the right hand. Make sure it gets into the right hand. So this hakpoda on the right hand is what he had spoken about. He had mentioned if you are going to process the mincha using your right hand or using your hand, it must be the right hand, as was we saw the hekesh to the chatos. So in the meantime, if we take stock of the Amoroim we had seen in this sugya, we have a repudiation of Rav Nachman, we have a support to Rabbi Yehuda. L'Rebbe Yanai, Rabbi Yannai, if you recall, he wasn't makbid on right-handedness. He said you can bring it up to the Mizbeach, even in the Avne, the Hamayno. So the source that we just learned, though, seems to, yes, be makbid, to be concerned with right hand. So the Rabbi Yannai, leimot evet yufta, should we say that this source is a repudiation of Rabbi Yannai? Omar loch Rabbi Yannai. Rabbi Yannai, who was flexible, he says, okay, maybe this source does not support me. However, ano di amri ketana de hektar, I hold like the Tanaic opinion cited in the source that dealt with hektar chalovim. This is alluded to through our markings. You'll notice there's a little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text indicating to look at Omid Aleph. So if you go back to Chaf Vav Omid Aleph, you'll notice an arrow also to the right-hand side of the Gemara text, pointing to a source beginning with the expression Hector, so Hector, Chalovim, etc. And in that source, we saw that all options were open. We said, Bein b'yad, Bein b'kli, Bein b'yamin, Bein b'smoil. You can use a hand, you can use a vessel, you can use the right hand, left hand, there are no restrictions. So that approach would actually support Rabbi Yannai. So that Rabbi Yannai says, I said my opinion based on the Tana of the Hector. And the Gemara here continues to say, V'lav litzdodin katoni, and not to learn it the way the Gemara had learned it on Omid Aleph in order to defend Rabbi Yehuda's, the greater of Yehuda's opinion. He said, split the source, B'yad, then it's only Yamin. Don't read it like that. Read it like we originally read it with the, quote, with the unrestricted approach, and that would support you reading the source as is without the Dodim answer that we gave for Rebbe Rabbi Chia. The source will support Rabbi Yannai's approach. Hiktir koinsa pa'amayim kshera. Before we go further in the Gemara, we have a note in the outside margin. The notes say, Machloikis Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi v'Rabbi Yochanan. We'll see a machlokas, a controversy between these two Amoroyim. Aha dikatoni, regarding the teaching in our Mishnah, Hikter Koimsa Pa'amayim. He offered the handful in two installments, two placings. Ha'im akavona afilu pa'amei pa'amayim, or not, o lo. Does that include multiple offerings beyond two, or not? Whereas two, specifically two, and not more. The Gemara. Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, pa'amayim, velo pa'amei pe'omim. The source says two, taking the kometz and offering it in two sections to the fire, that's okay. But not, don't break it down into smaller units. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, pa'amayim, vafilu pe'omei pe'omim. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, he says pa'amayim, it says twice, but it's not restricted to twice. You can even offer it in smaller installments as well. My binayu, what's the underlying difference between them? In other words, what explanation can we give that will help us understand their two opinions? Omar Rabbi Zera, he mentions two points. Yesh koimetz pachos mishnei zesim. And the second point, v'yesh haktora p'chusa mikazayas, ikah binayu. Does a handful contain, or can a handful contain less than two zaysin, two olive amounts, two quantities equivalent to an olive size of meal offering? And can haktora be fulfilled with a placing on the fire of some unit less than an olive quantity? The Gemara explains these using these two ideas to present the shitas. And you can see we've squiggle underlined the names to highlight Rabbi Shuman Levi and later Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Shuman Levi Sovar. Rabbi Shuman Levi, who said twice and not more than twice, he holds, so ein koimetz pochos mishnei zesim. A kometz is not considered a handful unless it has a minimum of two olive quantities of meal offering. So Rabbi Shimon Levi is makbid on the two kezesim in the handful. As a result, when you talk about breaking it down, it must be that it cannot be broken down any more than two, because v'ein haktara p'chusa mikezayas. You don't have a legitimate offering if it's less than a kezayas in quantity. So based on Rabbi Shimon Levi's starting point, that a kometz has no less than two zesim in it, we understand that the minimum amount that can be offered at any one shot is one kezayas. Rabbi Yochanan Sovar. Rabbi Yochanan holds, Yesh kometz pochos mishnei zesim. A kometz can contain less than two olives in quantity. So if your initial kometz has, for argument's sake, 1 3/4 olive quantity, and we're accepting the idea that it doesn't have to be put onto the fire in one shot. So if I'm going to put it in two shots, and I started off with 1 3/4 olive quantity, and if I'm going to put it in two shots onto the fire, so each one installment automatically is going to be less than one kezias, because my initial total quantity was 1 3/4. So if my original quantity is 1 3/4, when you split it in half, it's going to be less than one. Each installment will be less than one olive in quantity, and that's okay. So once you tell me that you can have a haktorah that contains less than an olive quantity, then I'm not restricted to two installments. I can do 3, 4, 5, and it's still considered a legitimate way of offering the kometz. So, reading Rabbi Yochanan again, Rabbi Yochanan Sovar, Yesh kometz pochos mishnei zesim. You can have a handful less than two zesim in quantity, and the Yesh haktora p'chusa mikezayis. And haktora can be accomplished even if that which you're placing at any given time, an amount that's less than a kezayis. Before we go on to the new sugya, we have a nosei, a topic heading in the outside margin. Ezo dargo shel sreifas hakometz bo'inon kidei lahatir hashirayim. What dargo, what level of burning of handful is needed in order for the shirayim, the remainder, to be allowed to be eaten by the kohanim? The Gemara. Itmar, koimetz, the handful. Me emosai matir shirayim b'achilo. At what point does its burning enable the shirayim to be eaten? Rabbi Chanina Omer Misha Moshla Bo Esaur. Moshla is an expression of meaning partial. When the fire takes hold of the kometz, even though it just merely took hold, a partial burning, that's already enough to allow the shirayim to be eaten. Rabbi Yochanan Omar Misha Tatzitz Boi Esaur Barubo. When the fire consumes most of the kometz, when the fire takes hold, so to speak, of most of the kometz, rove, the majority of the kometz. In other words, just when it starts burning, you cannot yet eat the shirayim. You have to wait until the fire takes hold of most of the handful. We are now encounter a long question. You'll see a kuf that appears to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text with a vertical dashed line. That indicates that all of the lines of this Gemara that are opposite this vertical dashed line form the question. Omar lei Rovin bar Rav Ado le Rava. Rovin tells Rava, Amri Talmidecha Omar Rav Amram. Your students quote Rav Amram as saying over the following Tanaic source. Tanya. This source, as you can see, is in a frame. We have some markings that we will make some allusion to, but before we deal with the markings, let's just mention that this source is a comment on a pasuk. The pasuk is in Vayikra, Perek Vav, Pasuk Beis. We've indicated a partial quote of the pasuk in the inside margin, where we've written, it says, Zois teras ha'oila, hi ha'oila, al moikto, al ha'mizbeach, kol ha'layla, ad ha'boker. The pasuk talks about parts of a korban, of an ola, that are on the mizbeach all night. The source will deal with what are those things that can be on the mizbeach in the fire all night. To make the reading a little easier, so we used a diamond to break down the source into two parts. This is explained in the outside margin under our mivneh. We featured a diamond, and you'll notice it features the expression dvarim, shedarkon, and we have a double underline to highlight likrav balayla, or dvarim shedarkon likrav bayom. There are, in the realm of sacrifices, there are things whose one is accustomed to offering them into the fire at night, and some things that must be offered specifically by day. If they're not offered by day, it will be pasul mishum lino, be called being left over. So once again, this source is a comment on a pasuk that talks about things that are in the fire of the Mizbeach all night. We will eventually have to get back to the question, which is not going to be obvious, but we did mention that we have a long question that is going to be raised. So the source begins, Tanya, Ein li ela, I know only Dvarim Shedarkon Likrav Balayla, things that one customarily puts into the fire initially at night. When we say initially at night, it doesn't mean it has to be at night, but it can be done at night. The initial placing in the fire, that those are the things that the Pasuk is talking about, that they can be on the Mizbeach in the fire all night. Kagon, what is included in those kind of things? Kagon, Evorim, Ufdorim. These are the limbs or innards of sacrifices. Shema'alon, Umaktiron, Miboi, Hashemesh. This is an important expression. Mibo Hashemesh means after the sun sets. Umis'aklim, Vahochin, Kol Alayla Kula. They can burn away all night in the fire. Dvorim shedarkon likrav bayon, things that are offered onto the mizbeach by day, kigon hakoymetz valavoyna vakturis uminchas koyhanu minchas koyn moshiach uminchas nesachim. These are a list of different items. Included in this list, we have the komets. We have other items too. They are things that are placed in the fire by day. In other words, if someone, let's say, has a meal offering, and he takes his handful of meal offering, the komets, and puts it into the fire at night, that will not be acceptable. Those are things, therefore, the komets is part of a list of things that are called darkon likrav bayom. The Brisa goes on to say, the last word in the line, Shema'alon, Umaktiron, skipping the bracketed section momentarily, Im Bo Hashemesh, you put them onto the Mizbeach. Im Bo Hashemesh means right before sunset. That's good. As long as you put it in right before Shkia, Shemis Aklin Bochlim Kol Alayla, from where do I know that it's okay for to have those kind of items sitting in the fire and being consumed throughout the night? Minayan, Talmud Lomar, Zois Toras Ha'ola Riba. That expression of Zois Toras Ha'ola comes to include even things whose initial contact with the fire must be by day. Nevertheless, their continued burning can be throughout the night. We have a small section that we skipped, and the reason for that is that which is contained within the brackets is an expression that's not accurate, and the Gemara corrects it. So let's read the Gemara again to include those bracketed sections. So we'll just read the line above that, where the Brisa was presenting a list of things, including Minchas Kol Moshiach, or Minchas Nesachim, Shema'alon, Umaktiron, Mibo Hashemesh, that one puts it into the fire after sundown. But how can you say the Ve'amr is dark on Likrav Bayom? But you just got finished saying where the double underline took place, just a few lines above that, that these were things that you offer by day. Ela, So you have to redo the lashon like we did. Im bo hashemesh, the source is investigating. How do you know things that are placed im bo hashemesh, which means before sundown? As long as you place them in the fire before sundown, they can continue burning throughout the night. Shemesh agvoch and kol alaylim nayin. From where do we know that? Talmud lomar zos torasoy the riba. That expression was inclusive. Now we're going to start focusing on that which is of importance to our sukkah. V'ho im bo hashemesh. If you're going to take the handful of a meal offering, place it into the fire right before sundown. Lo imishkachas lo shetotzit sa'ur barubo. The handful is not going to be rove consumed, the majority of it consumed within that very short amount of time. We're talking about seconds. And yet, this is considered a legitimate way of offering it. So that we see a kasha. We have a problem for Shitas Rabbi Yochanan. Lo kasha. Kan liklot, kan lahatir. There are two standards. For liklot means to be included or absorbed by the altar. In other words, to, let's say, as we say in English, to get in under the wire. To be included as being a kosher korban, it really is enough. Moshla bohor, the minimum amount of fire taking hold of the handful of meal offering is sufficient for it to be considered niklat, caught by the mizbeach, included on the mizbeach as acceptable. However, kan lahatir, when you talk about what we were talking about, at what point does the shirayim become allowed to be eaten? Well, you have to wait. You have to wait till the fire takes hold of most of the handful. So that the source was not talking about the standard necessary for allowing the shirayim to be eaten. The source was simply describing what is considered acceptable in the offering of a sacrifice. And in fact, the kometz, handful of meal offering, is considered an acceptable, legitimate offering simply as long as it's put in even a moment before shkia, before the sundown. Rabbi Elazar Masni Law. Rabbi Elazar has a different approach. He keeps the original text, in other words, that which we had before in a brackets, and forcing the Gemara to make a correction. He doesn't. He teaches. He learns this Taneg source as it is, namely Mibo Hashemesh, and the source then is talking about the kometz, amongst other things, after sundown. But she'll ask, well, but it's not acceptable. Umoikim la bepoikin. And Rabbi Elazar establishes or sets up the source, not talking about the initial placing of the kometz, but it's talking about a different halacha. It's talking about a halacha concerning the pieces of kometz that jump out of the fire. So when we talk about when you learn the source, it says the kometz that you are to place it into the fire after sundown. We're not talking about the initial placing whatsoever. We're talking about pieces of kometz that in the crackling fire, some of the material in the fire at times tends to jump out. That's poke in. Let's say then you're after sundown and pieces of kometz of meal offering jumped out of the fire. So the source is telling you that that kind of thing you would put back into the fire. The Gemara continues, V'chein ki also Rav Dimi Omar Rav Yanai bepoikin. Rav Yanai also learns the source regarding not the initial placing of the kometz into the fire, but rather pieces of meal offering that jump out of the fire. And that might very well be taking place at night. And the source is telling me, put it back into the fire. Umi Omer Rav Yanai Hachi, would Rav Yanai have explained the source like that? V'ho Omer Rav Yanai, Ketores Shepoko Me'al Gavi HaMizbeach. The Ketores is the incense that jumps off the Mizbeach. As we mentioned, the incense is burning in the fire, and in the crackling fire it might jump off. Afilu kreten shebo. Kreten means even a significant part of it. The incense was in a some type of a granular form or crystal form, and if a piece of it, even if it's a significant piece, a kreten, jumps out of the fire, ein machzirin oison. It's not to be placed back into the fire. And the source above that mentioned Ktores, and you'll notice in the source we had dashed underlined the expression Ktores. So in that source, Rav Yanai had set it up as referring to the case of Poikin, but in the case of Ktores, Rav Yanai himself says that there is, you don't deal with the Poikin, you don't put it back in. So the Gemara continues after citing, starting the problem here. The Rav Yanai says that in the case of Keturis, even if a significant part jumps out, you don't put it back into the fire. V'toni Rabbi Chanina bar Minyumi to be Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and Rav Chanina presents the following Tanaic source: Asher toychalo eisha so'oilo al hamizbeach. And from this pasuk we darshan, Ikule oilo ato machzir, consumed pieces of meat that jump out of the fire, you do put back. V'i ato machzir ikule k'toris. But k'toris that's being consumed, that jumps out of the fire, you do not put back in. So we see that the suggestion of learning the source above, the Rav Yanai suggestion of learning it concerning Pokin, and in the source it spoke about Pokin, the jumping off, and included Ketores, it doesn't align with that which Rav Yanai teaches concerning Pokin in the case of Ketores, that you do not put it back in. So the Gemara answers to resolve Rav Yanai and his approach to the long source and his idea of Ketores. He says, Sami Ketores. Sami means delete Ketores. Notice we have a little star to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. If you find the original star, opposite the line in which you'll notice there was a dashed underline, Ketores, he simply says, when you learn that source, don't include Ketores in that source. So what comes out? That source, in fact, is talking about Pokin, things jumping out of the fire. However, Ketores is not part of that discussion. And why is it not part of the discussion? Because Rav Yanai tells you that in the case of Ketores, and you have Pokin, you do not put it back into the fire. And that source, the long source, had been teaching about, yes, putting things back into the fire. You notice in our markers we have a slash mark, indicating that which follows is a new idea. On the outside margin, we have a nosei and mivneh. If you scan ahead in the text, you will notice in our Gemara markings we have some triangles. Triangles are one of the series markings, as are all the geometric forms in our marking system. And we've explained in the outside margin the triangles are sidra, a series shel shelos of questions. Be'inyon sidur hakoimetz ve'evorim al gabi hamizbeach. These questions deal with the setting up of the handful of a meal offering or limbs of a sacrifice on the Mizbeach. That's the general tie-in. We will be using another marking, a double underline with a design in it, under the expression Evorim Shesidron. So since we have the benefit of a recorded shear, the goal in the marking of this Gemara is to show a relationship between question 1 and 2, and eventually question 2 and 3. We will try to accomplish that if you just, through a visual approach, if you look at the first triangled question, the next line you'll see in the middle of the line, the Seder Olav. That expression is dashed underline. We will see a similar dash underlining when it comes to the second question. At the beginning of a line, you'll notice the Seder Alehen. So that idea of placing it upon without getting into details, that is a point in common between question 1 and 2. In question 2, you'll notice the appearance of this double underline and with design in it, a vorim shesidron, and you'll see the same type of marking when it comes to question 3, a vorim shesidron. So that's what we are trying to do through the markings, create a relationship between questions 1 and 2 and questions 2 and 3. Turning to the Gemara, Omer of Asi, ki poshet Reb Elozer b'menachos. When Reb Elozer was learning Maseches Menachos, boy hochi, he raised this question. Kemetz shesidroi v'sider olov es hamarocha mahu. He took a handful of meal offering, put it directly onto the surface of the Mizbeach, and on top of the meal offering he placed the marocha, the wood, mahu. Is this acceptable? It goes without saying that the normal setup is there's a pile of wood on the Mizbeach, and onto the wood, onto the burning wood, one would place the sacrifice. Therefore, this is a question involving something that's out of the ordinary. Is it acceptable, though? The question is in two, is it with an Aleph O Beis presentation? Do you say Derech HaKtor B'Kach? This is considered an acceptable, a normal type of offering. O Ein Derech HaKtor B'Kach? Or is this considered an unusual or sufficiently unusual a method to render it unfit? Teku. This remains unresolved. Boi Chizkia. Evorim Shesidron. Limbs of an animal offering that were set upon or placed set up on the surface of the Mizbeach. The Sider Alein is Amarocha. Notice the similarity in questions. And in the Chizkiah's question is very similar to Reb Elozer's question, only that Chizkiah is talking about the limbs of an animal offering, where Reb Elozer spoke about the handful of a meal offering. So Chizkiah has these limbs set up directly on the surface of Mizbeach, and on top of that, the Sider Alein is Amarocha, Mahu. And he set the wood upon the limbs. And again, you have the question is presented in an Aleph, O Dilma, or possibly Bay's approach. The reference, when we say O Dilma, you'll see that squiggle underlined expression, O Dilma, at the beginning of the next line, indicating the transition point. So, do you say, Al Ho'etzim, Omer Achmona, the Torah uses the expression of Al Ho'etzim. So when it says that the sacrifice is placed on the wood, is that expression to be taken literally? Let's read that again. Alo Eitzim Rachmona. Davko Alo Eitzim. Is it specifically and only that way? On the wood? Oidilmo. Kevon Dichsiv Kro Achrina. Since there's another pasuk that says, Asher Toichal Ho'esh Es Ho'oilo Al Hamizbeach. The Ola is the sacrifice itself. According to this phrase, where is the Ola located? Or where is it positioned? It says in this pasuk it's positioned directly on the surface of the Mizbeach. So since you have one pasuk saying the Ola is on the wood, the second pasuk indicates that the Ola is on the Mizbeach. So, Iboy Hochi Ovid, Iboy Hochi Ovid. The fact that you have this, what would otherwise be a contradiction, is basically suggesting you have latitude. You want to do it this way or that way. So, is this restricted to literally on the wood, or do other options exist? Namely, wood on top of the limbs of the korban. Teku. This remains unresolved. Boy Rabbi Yitzchok Nafcha, he raises a question. Evorim shesidron, here you can see the similarity between this and the question just before. We're dealing with the limbs of an animal offering that were set up. However, this is a new aspect. Betzidei hamarocha mahu. They're set up to the side of the pile of wood. And my understanding is that as the wood is burning, so the fire, the tongues of fire lash out also to its sides. So the limbs will be burnt as well that way, even though it's not placed directly on top of the wood. Nevertheless, the question is, the limbs were placed off to the side of the wood, mahu. An initial skip is indicated by these brackets, takes you to the top line of Chav Zayin Omer Aleph. Ki tiboy aloch, the question of Evorim shesidron betzidem rocha is raised aliba demadama according to the opinion that holds al, the word al equals besomuch, that the word al can mean next to. And as we saw in the previous question, the pasuk mentioned al ho'etzim. So if you say that al ho'etzim, the word al means specifically on top of, so then this question doesn't get started because the pasuk is insisting on being on top of. That's what is contained in the bracketed section that we just skipped. Therefore, that is not going to be a question. The question is raised only according to the opinion that holds that the word al can be besamuch, my. So the question continues. Hachinami al besamuch. Are we to understand al over here in this case as well? The al ho'etzim pasuk is can be next to. Oidilmo al ho'etzim dumya de al hamizbeach. Or are we to take the expression of al hamizbeach and read it in a similar way that you read al hamizbeach? Now, when you're dealing with al hamizbeach, there it's literally on top. Even if in other places in the Torah the word al may mean next to, not in the case of al hamizbeach. Ma hosam al mamash, just like in the case of al hamizbeach, it has to be on top of the altar. There's no option of having limbs set to the side of the altar. So just like over there, al is mamish. Av hochinami. So too, with regard to al ho'etzim, al means on top of, literally, and in that case then, if they were set off to the side, it would not be acceptable. Teku, this remains unresolved as well. We skipped a bracketed section. Now let's go over the reading. And as we mentioned, the purpose of the reading was just to enable for you to see the question in the smoothest way possible. What happens in the brackets is that after the Gemara raises the question, it tells you that the question is not being raised according to the opinion that says that the word al in the Torah, wherever you see the word al, it means literally on top of. Of course, if you take the word al to mean on top of, and our pasuk says al ho'etzim on the wood, it's then you don't have any room for asking what about next to, because al means on top of. So let's now read the Gemara with the entire text. Starting from the second line from the bottom of Omid Beis, Boy Rabbi Yitzchok Nafcha, Evorim Shesidron Betzidei Hamarocha, limbs that were set on the Mizbeach, next to the pile of wood, next to the fuel. Mahu, is this acceptable? Aliba demada Omar al mamish lo tiboyaloch de al ho'etzim ksiv. Or there's another girsa that actually doesn't even read the first three words of the top line, which is even easier simply to read. Aliba demadomar al mamish loti boyalach. According to the opinion that says al is literal, there is no room for asking the question. Once you say al means on top of, so you can't talk about next to. Ki tiboyaloch, the question is raised, Aliba demanda Omar, al equals besamuch. My. There is another opinion that says in other places in the Torah, Rashi gives the source for those other places. In the word al can mean next to. So according to that opinion, do I say hachinami al besamuch? So to here, with regard to the setting up of the limbs, it can mean next to the fire. Oy dilmo al ho'etzim dumyo de al hamizbeach. Since the pasuk mentions, in addition to al ho'etzim, it also mentions al hamizbeach. Ma hosam al mamish, just like in the case of the pasuk that says al hamizbeach, there everyone holds it means on top of, literal. Af hochinami, so too with regard to al ho'etzim al mamish, the limbs have to be set up on top of the wood and not next to it. Teku, this as well remains unresolved. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.